So welcome back, everybody, to a Praxis Audio Conference Training Series on Safety and Accountability Audits for Grantees of the Office on Violence Against Women. This five-part series, as you all know, is specifically designed for audit coordinators. My name is Casey McGee. I'm from Praxis, and I'll be your host for today's call. And today's part three in the series. Today we'll hear from Rhonda Martinson about the role of the audit coordinator. I'll let her start here in just a little bit. I'll just remind everybody that this September series is very specifically geared towards audit coordinators or people who are managing audit projects, so this is not an introductory audit series, but the October series will be introductory, and so you can also join us on the October series if you want introductory topics, or you can speak with us individually. You're really welcome to. So a couple of housekeeping details. I will not mute the lines during the presentations unless there seems to be a lot of background noise, so you all can. And Rhonda, I don't know if you feel the same way. Folks can jump in if they have questions. We can have it be interactive because it's a relatively small group. But if you have background noise in your office, you'd help us all out by pressing star 6 on your keypad to mute yourself and then star 6 again to unmute. So when you're speaking, please remember to say your name and the state you're calling from so we can identify you. And then lastly, we do tape these calls. We make them available for $8 a CD. And the order form will be available for download from our website by the end of the series. So, Rhonda, if you'd like to go ahead and start.
Thank you. I got the participant list from Casey a few days ago, and I recognize many names on here. There are some that I don't. And so for those new folks, my name is Rhonda Martinson. I'm a staff attorney at the Battered Women's Justice Project, which is the federally designated technical assistance provider to those of you that receive arrest grants. And we are also a frequent partner with Praxis in consulting and conducting safety audits. Like Casey, I've been one of the folks that has worked with Alan early on in some of the early audits and done a lot of training, curriculum development, report writing, and so on, and also have the experience of being a domestic violence prosecutor in a previous life and in a previous life, a dispatcher and jailer at a Wisconsin Sheriff's Department, so kind of a little audit team all on my own head here. And I've been doing this staff attorney gig for the last 10 years, and I would say probably the last six have been very involved in audits. Like Casey is for Praxis, I'm the liaison or contact person at my organization about audits. And I would say a conservative estimate at this point in my career would be some type of involvement in probably about 45 audits at this point, whether prosecution, law enforcement, dispatch, those are some of the typical ones, and there have been some atypical ones as well. But we can talk about those some other time. Anyway, let me just take a couple minutes to say how I plan to go through this little agenda. You've been sent some materials, and I've done this audio conference in the past and tried to touch on every item in the materials and found that that didn't work very well. There wasn't enough time to do that. And so what I decided to do for this audio conference is just choose those parts of the materials where we seem to have gotten a lot of technical assistance requests in the past, areas where past audit coordinators have asked for a lot of assistance or struggled with or perhaps had a success story that they would like shared with the rest of you, areas that people don't really have a lot of difficulty with, I won't spend any time on. So as I march through the materials here, and I'll tell you in a moment how I plan to march through them, if you see that I'm skipping over something that you had hoped that I would talk about or that you had a question about, I would just invite you to interrupt and jump in. And I think, let's see, what I'd like to do is just spend a few minutes on the job description that Casey from Praxis sent you. In other words, what are the typical responsibilities of an audit coordinator? Next, just spend a few minutes on the skills assessment. In other words, what skills are needed to carry out those responsibilities. And then probably most of the time on the actual role of the audit coordinator, those things that you see on that two-page sheet that describe such things as selling policymakers, assessing resources, and so on, is what I would like to spend most of my time on. And so before I begin, Casey suggested, since we do have a few new folks and also a few very experienced folks online, is there anything that anyone would like to throw out there for me that they had hoped that I would talk about, an issue perhaps that they're struggling with right now, or a question that they would like to have answered in the course of this call? No takers? And again, I'm easy to get along with, and we're flexible, and we're not muting the phones overall. So if you think of something in the next hour or so, be sure and jump in. And if you're the shy type and would prefer to ask me at another time after the call, my telephone number is 800-903-0111. And that's prompt number one, because that number serves a couple different resource centers. So prompt one will get you to my resource center. And then after pushing that prompt, 104 is my direct extension. That will get you right to my desk. Or if you'd rather email me, it's R. Martinson. I spell my name as an O-N, at EWJP.org. So again, if you're the shy type and prefer to talk to me later, there you go. Okay, let's start out with this job description. And by the way, I just want to make note that we've got two or three people on this call that have actually participated or been involved somehow in two audits, and I think they could probably present this audio conference as well as I. And if you ever feel like you'd like to commiserate or get support from someone that's been through this a couple times, I'll just mention their names, and maybe if they'd like to give contact information or future calls, I'll leave that to them. But Jen Miley and Jerry C. from Jackson County, Oregon, has gone through two nice, I think, well-done audits on law enforcement and in prosecution. And Rita Carenza from La Crosse, similar situation, a law enforcement audit, and most recently a prosecution audit. Again, nicely done in both instances, and would be great people to talk to about the role of an audit coordinator. So moving right along, Casey and I know that most of the folks on this call are already audit coordinators or have been assigned some sort of coordinating responsibilities, and so we certainly didn't mean to insult your intelligence by sending you materials on the job description. You might be thinking, hey, it's too late now, I've already got the job. But we also know that a lot of you have to work around the way that your grant is constructed. I know that some of our grantees have multiple supervisors, for example. Perhaps your position is funded by more than one entity. Sometimes you also are, shall we say, hamstrung a little bit by the way your employment is constructed. You might be part-time versus full-time, or you might be expected to incorporate your audit coordination in amongst other duties, such as being a prosecutor or being an advocate for battered women. And so that really, by the time you get into the audit coordinator role, you'll most generally are going to find that you need at least some assistance from somebody else. It might not be a lot, but that there may be something about the way your grant is constructed or supervised, or the way that your employment is constructed or parameter, that it's very difficult for all these responsibilities and skills to come out of one body. And so we think having a job description and a defined skill set ahead of time will give you some quality control over obtaining that assistance, and also give us, Casey and I, your wonderful technical assistance providers, we get some quality control too that way. And we advise you, when we help you, when we're there working with you to carry out your activities, if we have this kind of common sense of job description, of roles, of responsibilities, and the skills necessary to carry them out, we're all kind of working off the same page from the get-go. So the job description is, I guess, written the way that I would see any good job description written in a Sunday newspaper, for example, and that is the preparatory skills necessary, the relationships that you're going to be expected to develop, the administrative skills you'll be expected to have and what you will need, and other I guess what I would call communicative responsibilities, such as meetings, analytical skills, writing, and dispensing that writing at a later time. So I really would like to move on very quickly into the skills unless someone has a question about this job description. Any questions about that? Okay. And again, please interrupt if you think of something later on.
And Rhonda, this is Casey. I'm just going to just jump in real quick here. I know that just having been on the other couple of calls here, that perspective, it may be, and I just encourage you all to think about this, is just thinking through, do you understand clearly the role of the audit coordinator as it compares to the team and the stakeholders and other things? And maybe that's what you're about to get into, Rhonda, but that's something else that people do ask a lot of questions about. So.
Perfect segue, actually.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No, don't apologize, because that's a nice transition, nicer than probably that I would have done. The skills assessment, I think the first thing a person wants to know when you look at it is that it's not just about you as the audit coordinator, but it's also about where else those skills may or may not exist in your team or anybody else that might be advising or assisting you, such as a local supervisor or a praxis consultant like Casey or Ellen Pence, for example, or a BWJP, you know, technical assistance provider such as myself. And I'm sure there are other people. Maybe some of you caught the tail end of a conversation I was having with the folks from Jackson County, Oregon, when you first got in the call about the different grants that they've received, which requires different partnerships, different interactions with different supervisors, but also then I think a more comprehensive or more widespread access to different skills, skills that maybe you don't have or that don't exist in your team. So think broadly about that. Again, it's not just about assessing what you do or don't have. It's people that might be available to you as well. And so, again, in the spirit of not trying to cover everything all and doing a kind of roughshod and speeding over things too quickly, I've looked over the skills assessment and picked out things that I know that I've talked to audit coordinators and audit team members a lot about in the last year, and I'm not going to talk very much about things that people don't seem to have that much trouble with. So again, if I'm skipping over something that you were curious about, please interrupt me and ask. One of the things that I'd like to start out with in this skill set is the second item that's titled Knowledge of Battering and Other Forms of Domestic Violence, and thinking about that as a skill. And there's a couple of bullets under there. One of them is called Experience in Working with Battered Women. And it reminded me, when I looked at that, of a past audit coordinator that we had worked with that didn't have any experience in working with battered women. And I know that sounds kind of jaw-dropping in this line of work, that, wow, somebody wanted to hire an audit coordinator that didn't have any experience in working with domestic violence or with battered women. And I remember that Casey and I actually were concerned enough that we expressed those kinds of concerns about this hiring to the program director who wanted to hire her, but that director was pretty insistent and very certain that the other skills that this person possessed would make up for it. And she turned out to be right. This particular person had acted in either an advocacy or coordination capacity for other social service kinds of projects, other social change efforts. And really the only thing she didn't have was the substantive knowledge of domestic violence. She was very skilled in all other areas, even the kind of more difficult ones, such as writing, relationship building with other agencies, and so on. She was great. And so even where Casey and I had expressed some concerns, this particular director really saw the gem. And because of this woman's other skills and her other project experience, she also herself was able to recognize her need for substantive knowledge and was able to form a partnership with her supervisor, who did have a lot of experience working with battered women. And so they partnered where that experience was needed, in meetings, in trainings, when it was time to write the report and explain certain things and so on. And so whereas Often that's a key area, and Casey and I would always express caution about that. It's something where I know I certainly learned a lesson that it is something that you can partner with and pull in from your other resources. And so that is an example of what Casey and I meant by that at the beginning of this call, but also as an example of, I think, the importance of substantive knowledge and even someone that doesn't have it recognizing the need for it and forming a partnership to get it. A couple other points on, and as I move through this skills assessment, and then I'll again stop and see if anyone has any questions. Casey and I know it's hard to sit in one of these phone calls and listen to the same person's voice for an hour and 15 minutes, so what you're going to find me doing is stopping about every 5 or 6 minutes and seeing if you have questions. So I hope that doesn't sound like a broken record, but it's really kind of difficult to sit still for that long of a period of time as two, so we've tried to set a better rhythm on it. Something else that struck me under the knowledge of battering skill is the sub-bullet called the understanding of the role of independent advocacy. Another of our past audit coordinators had only briefly had a position of advocacy, but it was not as an independent advocate, not something from a community-based program or a nonprofit. This was an advocate who worked in the prosecutor's office. So her brief advocacy experience was really very system-based and not, she didn't have any knowledge or background in what the rest of us would probably mean as community-based or independent advocacy. And as the project progressed, one could see that this was frustrating for this person as well as the team, because this person carried out her role as she would at the prosecutor's office. She was kind of a whipcracker to get people to do things, which is a good skill to have, but it needs to be balanced with other skills. And I think this person also saw her role as a meeting planner, but not as a communicator of substantive issues, not as a relationship builder with other supervisors. And so I think one could say that the one-dimensional nature of this person's work experience also resulted in this particular coordinator often taking the position of defending the system as opposed to being an investigator of it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And unfortunately, this resulted in some tensions at meetings. It also resulted in a couple of team members not speaking to each other. But the problem was resolved by supporting this person and transitioning to another position that was more suited to her skills and moving in a person with more of a community-based advocacy background to finish up. That person did have the community-based experience. She understood the relationship aspect. She understood the independent advocacy aspect of working on behalf of the individual woman as well as the systemic barriers she might be facing, and wasn't, I guess, feeling because she was employed by a prosecutor as though she had to defend that particular office or had to defend law enforcement and so on. So trying to throw out a couple of difficult situations that people have had too, but also trying to give you some thoughts and strategies and ideas for how to solve those kinds of problems. And I want to emphasize that this didn't turn out to be a negative situation. It was very, I think, positively and constructively done, and everyone was happier for it. So a little tense at first, but it was really, I think, a frank assessment of, you know, this really isn't the right skill set for this job. We'll just reassess that and move people around a bit, and it worked out just fine. Let's see, what else did I want to talk about before I stop the questions? You know, another skill area that I can think of a few things that have come up with in the last year is the one that's called authority. That's at the bottom of the first page if you're following along in your skill set form. And the sub-bullet under that I think every single audit coordinator has complained to me about at some point, and I can almost see Jerry C. and Jen Miley from Oregon smiling a little bit, is holding team members accountable for their participation and contributions. Again, I say this in a sense of reassuring those of you that are new, because every audit coordinator has complained to me about that, and I want to reassure everyone on this call, you shouldn't feel as though something is wrong with you or that your project is going down the tubes if some of your team members are dragging their feet completing their assignments. Casey and I can help you pump up your skills and holding team members accountable, so I would encourage you to call us in these instances. But some tips I can think of now to build up this skill, but I think everyone feels deficient in it at one time or another, is developing the skill of friendly, persistent, humorous nagging. That can work wonders. Gotta have fun with it. You can't be a snot about it, but I think just that sort of friendly, funny face that's always there, kind of prodding you along to get some things done, is what some people need. Another thing that is helpful in holding people accountable in a positive way is making meetings and the completion of assignments attractive somehow. Bring food, have some fun sometimes, or if not attractive, at least rewarding. Perhaps you would like to make the public compliment or two about someone that's done an extraordinarily good job or found some extraordinarily unique or difficult to get piece of information. I'm aware of a couple of our projects that, you know, as you move along, you get to feeling like maybe you're just looking for something bad all the time, and that isn't always the case. Sometimes you find some really neat, really innovative stuff that you would like to encourage police or prosecutors to continue doing, and so it might be that you can use your audit as some sort of letter of commendation, for example, for a great job on a particular police report or a really innovative strategy in a prosecution of a case that really provided some extra safety for a woman or held a particularly bad guy particularly well accountable. So again, some sort of a attractive element or rewarding element to meetings or the completion of assignments is a positive way, I guess one might say positive reinforcement if you're into psychology stuff as opposed to the negative. And then I think probably most frequently what would be helpful is simply asking people outright what difficulties they're having in getting done or what they might need to get done. Sometimes you find people are just, they're good workers, but they're not good writers. Maybe they need someone to come with them when they observe or do interviews, for example, to take notes for them. Maybe they need a tape recorder because they aren't people that can read well or take notes well or spell well. Maybe they are a prosecutor who's just gotten a very serious, complex case dumped on them or assigned to them and are afraid that they're not going to have time to do their assignments well, and they might need permission from you to have an alternate team member where they can maybe make some of the meetings or do some of the assignments, but they may need someone that can step in and do some others of them if they get called to court appearances, motion hearings, and so on. So, again, this, I just want to reassure you, don't feel bad if you struggle with a team member or two. That's common, and you shouldn't think bad of them either. People are busy. People run out of steam. People feel overwhelmed at times, and if you can think of it in that sort of way, you make good assumptions about people and find ways to help them get the work done, ask them questions or reward them somehow. Those are often good tricks to get the job done. Another thing I'd like to talk about in the skill department is facilitation. That's at the bottom half of your second page on your skill assessment. And there are many different examples of how this comes up. One story that came to mind when I was looking this over was one of our past audit coordinators lives in a community with a significant Latina population. And at a meeting that this coordinator knew was coming up, this coordinator also knew that at this particular meeting, an issue about a negative system response to women of color was going to come up. And she decided, rather than to try to handle that herself, to invite an experienced local speaker and advocate for women of color to help facilitate that meeting. And I happened to be at that meeting, and it worked out great. It really diffused what I think could have been a bit more of a negative issue or discussion. This person provided, I think, a tactful yet different perspective on things, made some comments that I think probably would have been difficult for someone else to credibly make, that were very helpful eventually in getting some insight into that area, making some recommendations, and in strong but tactful report writing in that area. So I guess the reason I chose that particular example is the lesson here is to know not only your strengths, again, not only you as the audit coordinator, but also know the likely dynamic of your team and the likely dynamic of your discussions. You know, another thing I've run into along these lines is if you have on your team a more experienced, a more powerful team member that does all the talking, you might need to enlist the help of another team member who has a relationship with that person, who is better able to divert that person respectfully, help that person move on to another topic, help that person turn over the speakers, so to speak, the mic to someone else. Sometimes it doesn't work with, particularly if you're young or new to the job, it's difficult to do that to someone that has a lot more experience or expertise than you do that's just a bit more controlling in the talking department. And so that is another area that I would draw your attention to is have those sorts of things in mind and be ready with a plan B or a plan C if needed. And again, that might be enlisting the help of another team member that has a relationship with those sorts of more expert or more powerfully positioned team members. And last thing I wanted to talk about in the skill department, and then I would like to break for questions, is information management and writing. Those are both items that appear on our third page. They often are either successful or problematic together. So that's why I'm speaking about them together, even though they're split up on our sheet. And again, to reassure you, this is probably next to getting team members to do stuff. This is another big area of complaint or stressing out sometimes by past audit coordinators is managing information and writing it up. And again, I would say the lesson here is to know your strengths here and additionally know them early, because it will be very hard, if not impossible, to involve a new person and help you manage the data or write it up at the end of the project. In other words, that person might be a fantastic organizer of information, or they might be a fantastic writer, but it's really hard to be fantastic when you've come in at the end of a project and you haven't been at meetings, you haven't heard people's insights, you haven't gotten a sense of what's important and what's more minor, what needs to be prioritized and what doesn't, what may have some sort of hidden explanation to it, as often happens in domestic violence or in kind of criminal justice stuff, and it will result in a very different report. Casey and I could tell you some stories here, and, you know, I can think of some wonderful teams that worked their butts off and did a great job collecting information, did a great job organizing it, but either didn't feel comfortable writing it or did not, the appropriate time for them to write it was not budgeted for at the beginning of the project, and so somebody else was hired at the tail end. And I read the report, and I'm thinking, what meetings did this person go to? Because it doesn't even sound like the same information that I sat through with people. Some people have, shall we say, a snottier or sharper tone in writing reports of this nature. That is probably not going to be a very successful way to communicate with supervisors that gave you permission to do this. It probably won't also be a very credible way to communicate your findings, because they will know that person wasn't involved in the doing of the project. That person isn't involved in the day-to-day work that your team members are. And so, again, warning. If you know that writing is not your cup of tea or that of any of your team members, if you know that managing data is not those folks' cup of tea either, figure that out early and bring in someone who can do that and have them sit in at meetings so they at least get a sense of what's going on and what's needed. And again, Casey and I will have all sorts of empathy for you. We've even talked about doing a support group for people trying to write, because we know it's something that people don't often set out to do. And we would suggest that if you have a limited budget for consulting time, that this is where you might want to put it. This is where you might want to use us and plan for us to be involved. We do have a companion manual to the audit that I think was just put out at the end of last year, the beginning of this year, on text analysis, which is really kind of your biggest part of data management. And we actually are all meeting together next week on report writing. We're brainstorming things such as training you in report writing, if not training, perhaps tool development such as simple databases or report writing formats. And again, we just want you to know that we know it's hard, and we have all sorts of supports for you. And so if you are struggling and have budget constraints, I would suggest that you hold out the time that you need from us for this area, because it's, you don't feel alone. But again, to the extent that you can draw in writing expertise or data management expertise from team members, maybe you've got that really great person that can clink out a database. I've actually taken 3 classes in database construction just because I found it so helpful in managing information for my audits, and it has saved me lots of time and stress. And it may be that you have somebody that would like to do that and manage information for you. So anyway, I think I'll stop for a moment, and I'm kind of at a point where I wanted to see if you had questions. And, you know, I can continue this further if you like on the report writing aspect, but again, would like to stop and see if anyone has.
And the lines are all open. Again, if you're speaking and we can't hear you, you've got your line muted, so you just press *6.
Okay. Nobody's falling off their chairs or anything. That's a good sign. Okay. So, again, you've got a job description here that I think lists all pretty succinctly and in real simple, easy-to-understand fashion what the typical responsibilities are that we would expect of a good audit coordinator. And over the last year or so, we've also sat and met with what skills are necessary to carry out those coordination duties, whether from yourself or from team members or from other people in the community that can help you, or even from consultants like us. And this is kind of the whole laundry list of what we think that you're going to need. And so again, I'd like to stop now and kind of shift gears into the role of the audit coordinator, which is actually what it is that you're going to do, and kind of step through some of those things with you, and kind of your last chance on asking about roles, responsibilities, and skills before I move on to the actual doings of an audit coordinator. No takers? Okay, moving right along. The role of the audit coordinator is also something that Casey has sent out to you as a 2-page document. This also appears in your audit coordination manual, I believe. Is it one of the appendices, Casey, if I'm remembering correctly?
I'm sorry, to the toolkit, you're wondering?
Yes. Thank you. I keep thinking
about that. You know, Rhonda, you stumped me. I don't know if I don't think it's from there, though. I think it's just something we developed as a resource that we send out. I could be wrong.
But I was thinking. Yeah, if it's not in the manual, it's something that we often include in the manual for
right.
When we train. And so
yeah.
It's something that I'm kind of visioning it stuck in a back pocket or something. So anyway, the first item on the list, sell policymakers on the audit, is something that I would like to talk about. And I'm recalling, again, some comment that I made at the very beginning of this call about the fact that you know, we know that you have a grant already, and that probably many of you have an audit included in your grant, or you've already received permission to do it, so you're probably wondering, why is she talking about that? It's already set. And I just wanted to point out to you that the fact that you may have gotten a grant written and signed doesn't necessarily mean that supervisors are focused on that audit when they did it. You know, we often don't invest a huge amount of time, and I shouldn't say we don't. We often can't because we're busy. It takes a lot of time and a lot of contact with people to get a grant written and signed, and often the explanations that go along with it are kind of brief. Supervisors that are signing on to it with you, quite frankly, are often excited about getting some money and some training and some tools and some stuff, and it's easy to forget in the length of time that it takes for an award letter to actually arrive, which sometimes, unfortunately, takes like a year. It's easy for those supervisors who maybe weren't that focused on the explanation anyway to forget what it was they signed on for. And so when I talk for a little bit here about selling policymakers, the selling doesn't stop when the grant gets signed. You're probably going to have to do a little bit more of it once you get the award letter because, again, people will forget. Maybe the time that you invested at the beginning when you wrote the grant was rather brief, and more time needed to have been invested in that explanation anyway. Now is the time to do it. All of us are busy. Casey and I think we're just talking when the call began and just about forgetting stuff. The things that we do as technical assistance providers and consultants are often, we often have very heavily calendared lives and often are too smart for our own goods and trying to organize ourselves and just forget. These supervisors have similar situations, and again, you may have to invest some more time, even though you think you've already sold them, simply on refreshing their memories and reestablishing a comfort level with doing this project. Another thing that we've run into is supervisors changing. You have a lot of elected positions in the criminal justice system, such as judges, mayors, elected prosecutors, sheriffs, who sometimes are unexpectedly not around when the next year rolls around and the award letter arrives, and you find that you really have to start from square one with this new person. It doesn't work to ride roughshod over that new person just because it's already been signed. They're not going to get it, and there'll be continuing difficulties if you don't invest that selling time up front. Continuing difficulties meaning in getting them to allow a staff member to be part of the team and attend meetings, and allowing access to texts such as police reports, and allowing access to watching activities such as doing ride-alongs. All that will raise the hackles if that person feels that they were left out of the loop in what's going on, or that they're being kind of stomped over because they're new. And so again, the selling doesn't stop when the grant is written. Check and make sure that your partners are all the same ones, and maybe spend a little extra time smoothing the folks that are new and didn't even know that this thing existed. Finally, I think you get sometimes regrets or some political tensions that resulted from something else that sort of spills over onto your work. Maybe that problem between these two supervisors didn't exist last year, but now it does, and it's creating difficulty in getting the project done. I mean, we've had that happen where something has happened between, say, a jail and a police department, and then those people aren't speaking to each other. And, well, if that person's going to a meeting, then I'm not going, or we're not going to be involved, and so on and so on and so on. Again, we've run into these situations before, and I would encourage you to use people like Casey and I to brainstorm those kinds of things. We have, I think, constructively solved some of those seemingly negative situations with things like personal phone calls from us, where we can kind of chat them up about audits in general. That was more difficult in the old days when this was a new concept, but there's a lot of audits that have been completed now, and we can talk about them, we can give examples of them. I can think of one instance a few months ago where I actually had names of three prosecutors this person could talk to about a prosecution audit, and it was really a relief for that person. You could just almost hear the tension go out of that person's voice and their demeanor and about the project and so on, because they just didn't have quite the right picture of what this was and what was going on, and that it wasn't going to be some negative thing that ended up in the paper and so on. I also think a good strategy in continuing to sell is considering whether or not to include sort of skittish supervisors in your any introductory training or meeting of your audit team. You don't want them there throughout the whole time, you know, like for the next year, because that kind of creates a difficult power differential, and it's difficult for people to speak frankly in those situations. But to the extent that you're beginning your audit, you're maybe doing some basic training of your team on audit skills or what an audit's about, maybe your initial meeting of introducing everyone, telling what the grant is basically funding you to do. Those would be good times to invite kind of skittish supervisors or new supervisors, so again, they feel included, they know what's going on, they have a comfort level, they see who's involved. They see that it's not like a backstabbing session of a particular criminal justice agency. If one of us consultants happens to be there, they get to meet us and kind of figure out what our organization is about. And I think that kind of brings up the loop from beginning to end, is that the point I wanted to make here is that selling doesn't stop when the dotted line is full on your grant. It really is an ongoing process. People forget, or political difficulties come up that you didn't anticipate, and you might have to do a little salesmanship several times a year instead of that one-shot deal. Any questions from anyone? Are your supervisors sold? Nobody hinky yet? So that's good.
Oh. So we're Jackson County. We have a sheriff in Oregon. We have a sheriff that is probably going to be pretty hard to cultivate, and I'm wondering about any hints about that.
Is that person new, Jerry, or is that person the sheriff that had been there previously?
He just got reelected.
Oh, okay. One of the things that I'm sorry, were you finished? I'm sorry, go ahead.
In a pretty contested election with officer from another law enforcement agency in our county, so.
Mm-hmm. That's important. That was an important little tidbit to add. I've run into that a couple times in the last couple of years where even a previously on board kind of law enforcement leader can get kind of skittish when they feel like there's going to be any fodder for attack from a political contestant like that,
mm-hmm.
And can someone that maybe previously was open and pretty easy to get along with can sort of pull things closer to the vest and get a little bit more, I don't know, maybe even a little bit more suspicious or what have you, because they're concerned about that real difficult political situation that they just made it through. I guess one of the things there is that I would say as far as kind of helpful selling technique is just to give that person a little time, perhaps.
Uh-huh.
Secondly, we probably law enforcement audits would be the most frequently done audit. If you counted up all of our audits, I would say the majority of them did involve law enforcement. And so I think perhaps talking to someone like myself or Casey about kind of the results of those. Nobody's lost their job, or there hasn't been a big article in the paper. Nobody's gotten there hasn't been anything like, I think people fear that, but those kinds of things haven't happened as a result of an audit or an audit report or a news report about an audit. And I think we're pretty trustworthy in that department, so I think sometimes it's helpful to talk, to have them talk to us about those other examples. And I think the final thing that's helpful is more narrowly focusing your audit question. I think sometimes what's scary for people is the breadth with which the audit question might be drafted seems like it could pull in a lot of information. And so if you're trying to obtain the cooperation of someone who seems a bit skittish, is I would narrow your project and so that the information that they can see that's going to be required of them itself is much more narrow. In other words, it isn't going to impact areas that they are sensitive about. It isn't going to be interviewing people that are going to have bad things to say. And when I say that, I don't mean to imply one should shy away from difficult areas, because that would be kind of dishonest in our work and not helpful to battered women. I just mean that there's no point in scaring them and about whatever political difficulties that they're facing, which, you know, that sort of thing doesn't concern us as much if we don't have to. And so that is something we've also worked with people on, is just more narrowly defining the audit question so the materials and work that's going to be required doesn't seem quite as broad.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Rhonda, this is Casey. Can I just jump in real quick?
Mm-hmm.
Two things I wanted to mention, Jerry, and then also to all the other folks on the call. There are a couple of things we can do through technical assistance to help specifically in this area. And one is that at times we've given communities phone numbers of counterparts in other communities that have done audits. So if the sheriff, you think, is at the point where he might be open to talking to a sheriff from a different jurisdiction who's gone through an audit successfully, and if you think that would be helpful, we can hook you up with them in that way. Or secondly, we find that a lot of times video conferences where we or someone else who knows a lot about audits does kind of a presentation about what the audit's going to be, answers questions, and then creates a climate within which, in that environment, people can raise their concerns about what the project's going to look like, can also kind of go a long way. So it establishes this culture of this is what we're all here about. So if anybody's interested in either of those two things, they can let me know. That's all. Thanks, Rhonda.
Thank you, Casey. The next point I'd like to talk about in the role of the audit coordinator is I'm moving down now to the securing participation of agencies or systems, deciding which intervention steps to assess. I kind of wanted to segue into that since we just kind of mentioned that in answering Jerry's question. And again, in addition to what I just said, that you can kind of scare people or scare supervisors if you seem like you're being too broad. The other thing that not spending the upfront time to really nicely articulate your audit question or deciding what the heck it is you're going to assess is that you really have nothing to fall back on when people are trying to figure out what is it they're supposed to be doing. What guidance they might need, what is relevant. When you get towards the end of a project, it's easy for people's enthusiasm to suddenly have, you know, five boxes of paper and things that they found, and let's collect all the brochures from this agency and see what they say, and let's go over here because they have dealings with batterers once every 2 months, and I'm exaggerating a little bit to be a little bit smart, but a very broad or unspecifically written audit questions will allow that sort of flailing around to happen. If you more narrowly focus and more clearly state what it is that you are going to assess, it's going to be much easier to return to that and say when team members ask you a question, when team members are floundering with too much information, with trying to decide what's relevant, with how to write a report and so on, to go back and say, well, what is it that we said we were going to do? And let's look at that together. Let's read it out loud. Let's post it up on our meeting room so we can look at it every time we meet. And so, for example, to say, I am going to audit prosecution and see if it is safe for battered women and hold men accountable or batterers accountable is probably pretty broad. If, however, you were to say something more like, and looking at what steps you are going to assess is say, I would like to look at the charging decisions of prosecutors, or I would like to look at diversion agreements, or I would like to look at the criteria that a prosecutor uses in making dispositional decisions, such as dismissals, plea negotiations, and so on. That's much more specifically worded, and as you can kind of look out 6 months from now and your team has a question like, who do I need to observe again? why do I need to get these forms and look at them? You can sort of tie it back to what you said at the beginning. If you said something very broad, like we're going to look at prosecution, you're going to be floundering in, you know, like telephone books full of material that people won't be able to draw anything from, and it will be frustrating and overwhelming for them. Any comments or questions about that and kind of thinking through what steps you're going to assess and the importance of doing that up front or your role in it as a coordinator? Okay. Again, interrupt if you see fit. The next thing that I'd like to talk about is...
Rhonda, this is Casey. I, of course, have all the questions. But, you know, the one thing I thought that I'm wondering if you could just cover real quickly is whose job is it to decide on the audit question and scope? Is it the coordinator that does that, the team? Is it a group of stakeholders or a mix of that? I know that's kind of a tricky question.
Certainly not the audit coordinator. The audit coordinator's role is to coordinate the work. It would be inappropriate for one person to decide on the scope or the nature of that work. It should be a team approach, but it isn't always going to be the audit team. Sometimes you have a situation where a group of stakeholders has met perhaps to write the grant for the audit in the first place, and there's a desire to audit a certain area of your justice system, and you've already obtained permission or willingness from that person to do it. So I can think of several grants that I've reviewed where the police chief is actually wanting to be audited and has approached the advocacy community saying, can you help me write a grant so that we can evaluate our response to battered women? I don't think anybody would find that problematic. But the audit team then can later fine-tune the question. For example, are you going to look at every precinct in town? Is it just going to be these two? Are you going to look at, when you say law enforcement, do you mean police and sheriffs or just one of those entities? I'm thinking of, again, the folks from Jackson County who are on this call. When they did their law enforcement audit, this was already an area of law enforcement where not all but many officers had received a great deal of training, and so it was decided that the audit question would not be a basic one about domestic violence, but about particularly difficult areas of domestic violence and how police are responding to those situations, such as stalking, strangulation, sexual assault within the context of an intimate partnership, and so on. So that was how they fine-tuned sort of a general thing that the grant writers had already looked at. There were law enforcement and then some team discussion around fine-tuning that. So does that answer your question, Casey?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Brenda.
Okay. I heard some beeping there. Was somebody unmuting themselves to also ask me something or add something? Oh, okay. The next thing that I'd like to talk about in the role of the audit coordinator is the item that says secure participation of agencies and systems to be audited. Again, one would think that why is she talking about that? We've already got a grant. We've got people that signed on to it. And I have received a lot of calls and comments and questions along this line, and I think it has to do with a lot of people being new grantees in the last couple of funding periods. In other words, people that haven't received any sort of violence against women grant before. And again, I know some of you on this call are more experienced in the grant department, but for those of you that aren't, when I say secure participation, I'm receiving a lot of calls from grantees this year who may have signed a grant but really do not know what even some of the basic terminology means, such as coordination. They don't really know what we mean when we talk about victim safety or offender accountability. And so it's very difficult for an agency that has signed on to a grant who doesn't really understand those basic terms that all grants and all audits utilize, and then how to sort of carry out their permission for those entities to be audited. In other words, if they don't know what coordination or collaboration means, how does that carry out then in their required coordination or collaboration to get this audit done? Yeah, they signed on to it, but they didn't really know what it meant. And the same with victim safety. Well, what information is relevant for them to give you or to give you access to if they have a different kind of more curtailed version of victim safety concerns than you do? And similarly with offender accountability. And so, again, I don't want to insult anyone's intelligence here because I know you got people signed on to a project here, but one thing I would just throw as a caveat to those of you that are new to this is it's that same thing that I was talking about before, people signing something that they aren't, you kind of can tell later on they didn't really know what they were signing on to, and I would, if you get that impression or if that seems to be the case from the way that they are kind of carrying out their cooperation with you, I would take the time to see if they understand what those terms mean. And I think you can do that in a very non-insulting way by just showing them the grant or the application process for the grant, which is pretty well defined and laid out by the Office on Violence Against Women as to what they think coordination means and safety and accountability, and that those are three very, very, very important things in any grant or in any safety audit. Any comments or questions about that? Again, just like the selling doesn't stop, the participation or the permission aspect that you think you've got, that doesn't always stop either. You've got to do a reality check with people occasionally, especially if they're new. Okay.
And Rhonda, this is
I'm
sorry?
No, I was just asking you as Casey. Cause I
oh, because I'm always jumping in.
Yeah. I know.
My mistake. I had the lines muted. If anybody was trying to talk, really, forgive me. I had everybody muted.
They used in Carson, and the one I would prefer, and I can't find.
Hi, is there somebody in the background there? Oh, I think somebody was just. Sorry, folks. This is a question and answer time, and I have muted your line. My apologies.
Okay, we were just breaking for questions or comments that anyone might have about securing the participation of agencies or systems to be audited. And if there are no takers on questions or comments on that item, I will move on.
And Rhonda, you just have about 15 minutes left.
Okay, thanks. That's perfect.
Okay.
Right about where I need to be. Thank you. Another thing that I think is important to discuss in this role of an audit coordinator is determining how battered women and advocates will inform the audit process. Real important not to forget, this is what we're doing this for. In kind of in our early days of auditing, we've actually had some audit coordinators that didn't think about talking to battered women or doing focus groups or interviewing any of them. And we've got to remind people to do that. And again, I'm being a little bit facetious to make a point, but again, it's what the grants are for and what an audit is all about. It's who the audit is meant to serve. And so it's important that their voice be in there somehow. Now, the difficult part is sometimes battered women don't want that, at least not in sort of a classic group sense. So I'm just going to throw to you some obstacles in that department that some of our other audit coordinators have successfully overcome. And that is, I think especially in smaller towns, women are going to be uncomfortable in coming together as a group. Not always, but it's a possibility, again, I think in smaller towns where the people just are more fearful of being identified somehow or that they're going to be seen talking to you or, you know, some other such thing. And so a focus group, I think, is always the best, but if you can't, other ways in which to still keep that voice of battered women in, instead of simply giving up on it, is check with your local domestic violence program to see if there's a support group of battered women that meet there, and if that support group might be willing to give permission for one of their group sessions to be turned over for discussion of whatever your systemic question is. I've done that before, and it's worked out wonderfully, where a group has decided, okay, tonight our topic is going to be blah. You know, it might be, I don't know, the dispatch response to a 911 call for domestic violence assistance, and have a great 90-minute discussion with a group of seven or eight women about their experience with 911, for example. So that would be one way to overcome the obstacle of if you're having difficulty getting a focus group together. Another would be if you can't get the support group to give permission to turn over to you for an evening, would be to see if advocates could suggest several women that might be willing to do an interview with you individually. In other words, perhaps they are uncomfortable in a group setting, but would be willing to talk to you privately about whatever your question is, whether it's a law enforcement question, something about the prosecution of their case, or so on. Again, I've been involved in doing that kind of series of interviews, and it's really produced a wonderful bank of information. Again, not, I think, as ideal as a focus group, but still a very good way of keeping voices in. Although the least ideal, again, better than doing nothing, is if women are uncomfortable even with that. And again, I have found this particularly true in really small, sparsely populated areas, is you might check with women to see if they'd be willing to have a private telephone interview with you, or even an email exchange. And I don't recommend in kind of relying your whole project on it, but if you're trying to really add in as many voices as you can and you can't really get a decent group or a series of interviews together, I've also offered to do that and gotten, again, some fantastic pieces of information and stories by interviewing people on the telephone who then I don't see their face, you know, I don't know who they are, they're much more comfortable with it, and even doing some kind of instant messenger email things back and forth with people. So, again, really important to keep the voices of battered women in. It really won't be an audit if you don't do that. And I just can't emphasize it enough. It can be very skewed towards what is efficient for the prosecutor or the police officer as opposed to what is safe for this battered woman if you don't talk to them. If you feel like you just aren't getting enough women to talk to or to interact with, I would also bring in advocates who have worked with women a lot, because at least you'll have a mental collection of stories, a mental sense of safety issues in the community, or themes of accountability issues and so on, things that are happening on a regular basis, resource gaps and so on. Again, if you can't get it all from battered women, pump it up with the advocates who work with them. Again, just bend over backwards not to avoid that area or scrimp on it, because it's what you're doing your report for, and it really is going to fall flat if you don't have a full enough inclusion in that community of women. Casey, any other points that I should make here, or does anyone have any questions?
The lines are open.
Alrighty, moving right along. The last couple of things I will talk about are just, to kind of reiterate what I said in the skill set, which the last thing I talked about in the skill set was information management and report writing, and I'm kind of going to end up in parallel lines in this role of the audit coordinator by talking about sharing preliminary findings with agencies and then creating a final report. These two are things that audit coordinators have often asked us about, needed strategizing about, or needed some consulting about. And so sharing preliminary findings is key, and it's part of that selling process, and it's part of that continuing permission process that I just talked about. If you start a project, I can think of a couple instances instances, wonderful relationships of long-standing, great chemistry, and everything's off to a fantastic start, you know, five-star start, just couldn't be any better. And then it's like the supervisors do not get included anymore until it's final report time, and bang, the report gets slapped on their desk. And boy, talk about a negative end to a wonderful relationship. That is not the way to do it. You've got to keep supervisors informed as you go so that there aren't any unpleasant surprises, dramatic, or the kinds of things that you as professionals are going to raise defenses or are going to hurt people a little bit or make people defensive. And so you need to keep people apprised of things right along so they don't feel like they're getting sandbagged. And also, I think, so that you can apprise them of positive things. Again, you are going to find those things as we go on an audit, that something that's particularly innovative that I think nobody knew about that you'd like to continue doing, a great idea that someone had that probably should be included in a policy in the future. And so supervisors should have that comfort level with you that you're moving along at kind of a regular pace in a balanced way, good and bad, and that you're coming to them kind of regularly along the way with both of those things. So if, for example, you're finding that, that your midnight shift in a law enforcement entity is not doing reports as frequently as your day shift is, you're going to need to sort of let that cat out of the bag kind of early to a supervisor so he knows it's coming. He actually may have some explanations for it, and those are things that you would need to know to include in a report or in your debriefing. Perhaps there's been a turnover there. Perhaps a supervisor for that shift that normally would check the reports has been on sick leave for 3 or 4 months and hasn't been replaced. Those are the kinds of things that can really change your viewpoint, change what your recommendation will be if you simply had a supervisory explanation or at least some input on. And so that's another reason that one needs to involve them pretty early on as far as what you're seeing. And so I would suggest that a positive way to do that without kind of feeling like you're running to this person for permission, because again, you don't want to view your report that way either, is just to make it a regular habit to interact with them. And you can ask them how they would like that to happen. Would they like to have coffee with you occasionally? I personally would suggest something more personal like that so it doesn't feel so scary. Would they prefer a meeting? Are they really busy and would just like a catch-up phone call once in a while or a chatty email? Those things are fine too. I personally think a private little coffee date once in a while is probably the best, but these are the kinds of things that ensure that continuing cooperation and that continuing sense of being on board instead of feeling like, wow, what the heck just happened here 12 months down the road. So again, share findings preliminarily with agency heads, because you may find additional explanation and you may find that that's necessary to continuing good relationships. Any comments or questions about that? No? Okay. Last point then, and I guess we're going to end up right up on time here, is report writing. And as I said before, and I just can't emphasize it enough, please save your stress level and your sanity by assessing very frankly now, at the beginning of your project, what skills or desire you have, even if you do have the skills, or time that you have to write a report. It does not take only a few hours to write a report of this nature. I mean, the thought that's necessary, the editing, the respectful involvement of other people that will need to read it first. You're talking about a couple good solid work weeks of time there. And if you don't have it, admit it now and start involving someone that's going to help you do that or do it with you. I think a lot of people assume when they create the position of an audit coordinator or hire an audit coordinator, that, you know, they just kind of do this vague hand waving that somehow you'll take care of that. You know, well, that's their job. And it's really important that you figure out how that's going to happen now so that you're not sitting at the end of a grant period with one day to go before the money has to be used up and realize that you're expected to write an 80-page report in the next day or two. I mean, that's just not going to happen. I have seen someone try to do that, and the result was so... the quality level of it was in such stark contrast to the work that the community knew had already been done that it a person really might as well not have done it at all. And so I just throw that out there to you, is don't lay that sort of heavy load on yourself. Just recognize now that it's an important thing to do. It isn't hard to do. It takes a lot of time to do it well, that's all. And if you can't do it, get somebody to help you who can. And again, I would reiterate that here's the time that if you do have limited budget or time allotted in your grant for consultation, this is probably where you want to save most of it for. Casey and I both started doing this at about the same time, so at this point we probably have, I don't think it's exaggerating to say between the two of us, probably thousands of hours of report writing under our belts at this point. We've done the stay up all night and stressful things too. So we really can help you out a lot with where to save time, how to do things, how to use charts, how to involve other people in helping you do the writing. We've done some group writing. I personally think that's the best, is to involve your team and write as a group, you know, so that everyone has input and equal responsibility and accountability for that report instead of it just falling on the shoulders of one person. And I think that's where I'd like to end up is, as the audit coordinator, you really are coordinating a team. You shouldn't feel like you're in the position of being the team or doing the work that the team can't or isn't doing. You're coordinating it. And as such, you know, you should be part of that sort of equal responsibility, but not be the sole responsibility holder for things like information and report writing, because that can come back to you. If someone, a supervisor, is uncomfortable with the way something is written, it's real easy to say, Jeff wrote that. You know, that was, that Jeff found that. And again, if you end up being the person that the report sort of falls in your lap at the end, that's kind of how that can happen. But if it's more of a group responsibility and group project right along, that isn't going to happen. It's going to be a much more credible report because it comes from everyone, and everyone will be proud and take responsibility for it. And here we are at 3:15. Any wrap-up comments or questions that anyone has?
I have a question. My name is Mary Hansma. I'm participating on behalf of the Domestic Violence Work Group of Essex County, New Jersey. We are considering and exploring the possibility of conducting a safety audit. So my question is about how much, what kind of a time commitment, you know, should we expect a coordinator to be able to give? This sounds more like a full-time project than something that, you know, can really be done on a part-time basis. Mm-hmm. I did hear you say that sometimes, I guess I heard you talk about the participation of a DA or a prosecutor, but I suppose that's as a team member, not as a coordinator. So the coordinator...
Well, we actually have someone on this call that's a prosecutor, that's a coordinator, so... Wow. I know that doesn't happen very often because people that have a caseload like that where you get called into court, it's often harder for them to schedule their time. So I've told Jeff I'm really interested to hear about his experience, you know, and how it plays out for him as we move along. Casey, I know you have some thoughts about time. I'll just say real quick, I've worked with coordinators who've been given 8 hours a week to do it. That's not enough. You know, if you're going to meetings, you know, a couple times a week, and then you also have to schedule things, read things, answer people's emails, it really isn't enough. It might be enough as you're wrapping up the project, you know, when there's less work to do, but certainly during the time when activities are the heaviest, such as meetings and observations and reading through files and so on, that's really unrealistic, and it's very overwhelming to that person. Of course, we think full-time is wonderful, but a lot of times it's difficult for the person writing the grant or writing the position to justify it.
The number of participants in the conference is 10.
And so I think many people are in the position of either having a position that allows them to coordinate the audit full-time when activities are heaviest, and then returning to some other duties when the activities are lighter. In other words, it is a kind of a part-time employment, but kind of in a balloon fashion that you can squeeze more time into one part of the year than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are other people that have, say, a half-time or quarter-time job as an advocate that are able successfully to ask other people to do some duties that they do not have time to do during the week. So we've had some, I can think of one project that I thought was a very successfully organized and run project where they simply had two half-time audit coordinators that were employed by other people. And they did that, quite frankly, so they didn't have to pay those two people benefits. But those two people were employed elsewhere where they received benefits, and they were willing to do that. And so they did a very good job at sharing responsibilities of what was a full-time job, because it was a very big, comprehensive audit, and it worked out great.
Okay. And I saw in some research...
Hello?
Hi, I think we might have just lost Mary. I wonder if she might have been on a cell phone. We do need to wrap up, but just out of respect of people's time. Mary, if you can still hear us, why don't you give me a call directly after this, and we can talk more at length, or you can give Rhonda a call directly as well. So thanks, everybody, for joining us today. Please remember to fax in or email your evaluation forms, and join us same time next Tuesday when we're going to talk about how to articulate your findings and write that report. So thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Rhonda, and we'll see you all soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.